Well, as it happened, when we, after that work, the question still remained, what is the mode of action of prostaglandins in insect cell systems? And we know from the mammalian background that one mode of prostaglandin action in mammalian cell systems is the influence on expression of a large number of proteins in mammalian cells. So the stage was set. Challenge insect cultured insect cells, establish cell lines with prostaglandins, wait 12 hours or 24 hours, and then begin the usual two-dimensional gel electrophoresis, and follow that with gosh, I hope there's nothing private on this thing you're showing everybody. Follow that with the, you don't have any of my real stuff in there, do you? Okay. Follow this with the typical work that people are now doing in proteomics. 2D gels, use Song's gel scanner to determine differences in protein expression among these treatments, and then pick out the proteins that are of interest and get sequence data and follow that with the sort of proteomic work. Hit cancel, please. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We're almost done. Follow that with a sort of proteomic analysis, and then you begin getting ideas, of at least putative ideas, of what protein are being influenced by these prostaglandin compounds. Let me just say that the outcomes of these experiments told us that when treated with either prostaglandin A1 or prostaglandin E1, let's see if this is going to march along. There we go. Well, let's just go back quickly. Here's our friends, the eicosanoids, with the hydrolysis of arachidonic acid to from phospholipids, formation of prostaglandins and other compounds. We think they act by way of receptor systems to stimulate prostaglandin function. And these things, Mike Strand showed us earlier this morning, these kind of microaggregation encapsulation reactions. So we had established that eicosanoids act in microaggregation and nodulation. And we were asking questions about gene expression, cell migration, and cell spreading. We're now going to do a Cook's tour of this work, okay? Here is the two-dimensional gels that we came up with. We found significant changes, I mean really good changes, in about 33 proteins as a result of prostaglandin treatment. Two of them that excited us in response to, it was this spot right here, spot 25, in response to PGA jumped up about, in response to PGE1 jumped up by almost 18-fold, and this is a heat shock protein. And I put this other protein here, which is a superoxide dismutase, just to show that not all prostaglandins change all proteins. So we think there's specificity in this reaction. And we also did the sort of RT-PCR to indicate that the changes in the mRNA are sort of consistent with the changes we saw at the protein level. Now, the fun part is we're doing this now with two series prostaglandins, and although the work with the one series prostaglandins is published in Larry's old journal, now are doing this work with the two series, and we find that prostaglandin A is causing changes in a large number of proteins, well over 70 of them. And this is kind of interesting to me because in the past time when we were doing biochemical work, we found that prostaglandin A2 was the predominant prostaglandin. Here, for example, is A2 among these things done, and it's the quantitatively key prostaglandin, and this is changing the expression of most proteins in these cellular systems. So, what we think we've done here then is identify a specific mode of action of prostaglandins in insect cell biology, and that is to say, prostaglandins influence the expression of a good number of genes. I think what we're going to try to do is find more of these genes and see what they really mean. Now, one of the things that's basic to cell biology is cell migration. In wounding healing, for example, cells have to go to a site of wounds to get involved in healing the wound. Cells have to go to sites of infection to get involved in that. And we can trace cell migration using a Boyden chamber. This is a kind of a cartoon of one where you might put a hemocyte preparation in an upper chamber, have a membrane with a pore size of about 5 microns separating from a lower chamber that has something that might be a chemical attractant. So we hypothesized that insect hemocytes would be drawn in a migratory way toward a chemical attractant like FMLP, which is a signature protein produced by bacteria. The first Boyden chambers were made by a guy named Boyden, and they were 4.5 milliliters in volume. Now it's done in these sort of neuroprobe chambers at 25 microliter volumes, and you can do large number of experiments in a single run. And the data would simply show that if we stimulate cell migration with something like FMLP, that stimulation can be inhibited with any of a variety of probes of the various eicosanoid biosynthetic pathways, and that inhibition can be reversed by treating the cells with arachidonic acid, the precursor of prostaglandins. And I say these things work in a dose-dependent way, and the key point would be that one of the central issues in defense reactions and development, that is hemocyte migration, seems to be influenced by eicosanoids. Another issue is cell spreading, and we can see here plasmacytes spreading out on glass, and we can measure this spreading. And what we've managed to show here is eicosanoids are involved in that. Here's the normal plasmacyte elongation seen in a control treatment compared to a treatment with inhibition of eicosanoid biosynthesis. We find that works in kind of a dose-dependent way. And then again, it can be reversed. The inhibition effect can be reversed with arachidonic acid. And then we think then that cell spreading is one of the specific actions that is influenced by eicosanoids. And this is cool because, you know, Mike Strand and his colleagues worked on the plasmacyte spreading peptide, and now we have two factors that might be involved in influencing cell spreading, the PSP and eicosanoids. And this is similar to some work I'm going to draw on from Professor Kim, who is looking at the influence of biogenic amines on cell actions. And showing that, yes, biogenic amines do influence cell actions, as shown years and years ago in the Roger Downer lab. But the question was, well, how can both eicosanoids and amines affect the same thing? And by using selective antagonists to the amine receptors and rescuing the reaction, show that apparently both of them are involved, and the eicosanoids work downstream of the amines. And it may very well be that in the work with cell spreading, that eicosanoids work up or downstream of the PSP. And so we can find out more about the number of compounds that are involved in influencing these kinds of cell actions. I have 6 seconds to go, just to tell you that we've been doing a lot of work on viruses now, and we know that eicosanoids influence a variety of reactions, interactions of the nodulation reaction to some viral infections. And then also using a red fluorescent protein, showing that inhibitors of the eicosanoid system influences the entry of a red fluorescent protein expression virus into these HM1 cells. And so we think that various aspects of eicosanoids are influencing insect cell viral interactions. And I think given what other possibilities exist, we'll find that eicosanoids are really a big deal in a lot of aspects in the cell biology of insect immune systems. So we'll recognize Art McIntosh, who provided the cells, and my support scientist, Sydney Goodman, and technician, Steve Long, and then my former student and colleague, John Miller, for getting this work done. All this stuff was done in RAR's work. So with that, I think we have 40 to 50 seconds for a question or two. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
I think I may have missed it. So what kind of cell line that is?
It's Helios Z, a cell line prepared from, originally from pupal ovarian tissue.
Ovarian cell?
Yeah.
And another question is, earlier slide, probably one of your private slides, you showed us some cellular downstream pathway of PGE2 or other exosomes. So in your cell, checked any cycling density or calcium mobilization type of?
Good question. We started with phospholipase A2, and we've done a really big bunch of work on PLA2 in the cell line, showing now that the cell line produces at least two distinct phospholipases A2, and we know a lot of the characterizations of that. One of them is sensitive to calcium, one is not, and we're pretty close to having those purified, so we should know something about the cellular PLA2 and be able to use the sequence information to go further into that. So. And then we'll go to the next protein. Yes, sir. Doing that now with I did a little job in Peoria for a few months, and while I was there, I met a high-powered chemist, and we're going to be doing that in a matter of weeks. So right now, I can lie about it and say I'm sure it's there, and then we'll back that up with data in the future. Well, let's conclude then our morning session of this symposium. And you know, it's interesting to see all these fascinating molecular and proteomic approaches to understanding insect biology. And as I was listening to that, I was thinking of another paper that Larry Gilbert wrote in the 1960s, a review in Advances in Insect Physiology on Insect Lipids. Those were the days when they paid you by the page to write papers in Advances in Insect Physiology. And he must have made quite a bit of money on that paper. But the fact of the matter is what it, you can look back on some of these classic papers from the earlier decades and see this wonderful, wonderful growth in insect science. And I think it's coming to a very, very rapid acceleration as we see all this work in sequencing of proteins, sequencing of DNA, genes, understanding how these things work. And I welcome you back to the afternoon session to see what more we know. Thank you.